Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, thank God, that wasn't the one with Mom yelling. I'm so oversensitive right now. I'm so tense that even a recording of my mother screaming at me might throw me off. Welcome to the Jake Pentland Show, a very, very heavy Jake Pentland Show. Usually when we do heavy topics, it's just the people that we're talking about are heavy, but this is actually a heavy subject, and I will do my best to not be my usual self. But before we introduce our guest, I want to say hello to my co-hosts and two besties in the whole world, Jen and Eli. Jen, how are you?
I'm just great. I have sweaty armpits, but I'm doing well.
Nervous, right?
I'm nervous. I think it's a really I want to make sure we say what needs to be said, and he gets to say what he needs to say, and you know, it's a heavy subject. So.
Well, we do have a history. You know, on this show, I think the worst things you can say about it is that I tend to ramble and pontificate a bit much. But when we've talked subjects, I think we've done a good job. I think we'll be fine today. And on that note, I'm not going to ramble anymore. But Eli, real quick, how you doing, bud? You all right? You ready?
I'm great, Jake. I'm really looking forward to the show.
You sound like you're on a bunch of Adderall that you just snorted. Are you okay?
No, I'm actually on caffeine. I haven't taken Adderall in probably a month and a half, and I'm counting each day. Actually, maybe 2 months at least. So I'm really happy for myself.
I'm very happy for you. We've come a long way. You know this.
And I lost my weight in a healthy way. I haven't done it artificially, chemically, what have you. I've done it the right way.
Congratulations, man. You look good. I hung out with you earlier.
Thank you.
You look healthy. I sound so gay. Okay. Without further ado. Oh, I was going to say, Eli, before I bring it, I know that you love to do sound effects today. Do you think you could not do sound effects?
Or just I will not do sound effects. I understand the sensitivity, and sometimes I have a hard time filtering myself, but I will not do sound effects today.
Today is the day to pretend that you are not a sociopath. Of all days, today is that day. All right, well, we are joined by Glenn Canning. For those of you who don't know the story of, and forgive me if I'm not pronouncing her name right, but I'm pretty sure it's Rehtaeh Parson. Excuse me. Did I pronounce that right, Jen?
That's how I've heard it. I haven't heard it out. Yes, I've heard Rehtaeh Parsons, yes.
Well, anyway,
it's an interesting name because it's Heather spelled backwards, and I kind of read the story on it. Is her mom always had a niece named Heather and would spell it backwards and call her or say Rehtaeh. So when she had her daughter, she named her Rehtaeh.
Rehtaeh Parsons. It's a very sad, terrible story, and it's gotten national news in Canada for some time, but it's kind of spread to America in the last year, and I'm going to let Glenn kind of catch us up. I don't want to get any details wrong, but if you haven't heard, you can go Google the name Rehtaeh Parsons, and you'll know why we are so nervous and sweaty. But no more rambling. Glenn, can you hear me? You're on the air.
Yeah, I can hear you great, Jake.
First of all, I want to say thank you for calling in. I know that you've been doing a lot of work with your campaign, your anti-bullying campaign. I know that you do talk about this, and this must be difficult, but still, it is with honor that you are on the show. It means a lot to me, so I just want to say thank you.
Thanks, it's also nice for you to welcome me on your show. I appreciate it very much.
Okay, well, now all the niceness is out of the way. Tell me, catch our listeners up that may not know, because I know you've been, this show was covered on Dr. Phil, it's been on Dr. Drew, it's a big national story, but my audience, this is a unique opportunity for you to get your story, because a lot of the people here, I don't even know if any of them work. I think a lot of them are like in mobile homes. I don't even know how they have internet. So you're going to be reaching a whole new list of people. So just catch us up for those of us who don't know the tragedy that is Rehtaeh.
All right. I'll go over it. Rehtaeh's case involves a sexual assault. It involves child pornography and cyberbullying, as well as mental health issues. And unfortunately, the whole story ended in a suicide. November 2011, Rehtaeh went to a friend's house sleepover. She was in grade 10, a junior. It was a new school, but she had a lot of good friends there from her junior high. But this girl here, she didn't really know her that well, but it was a sleepover, and she was excited about it. It was in November 2011, like I said. And at the girl's house sleepover, the girl knew some boys who lived down the street from her that Rattaya didn't know. She wanted to go over there to see them, and the other girl did. They went over, and the boys who were there had some vodka in the house, and they wanted the girls to share with some of them. Rattaya doesn't remember much after that. She remembers that they were challenging her to have shooters or shots or something. She thinks she had 9. And she remembers waking up the next morning in the house, laying between 2 of the boys. She didn't remember anything that really happened between there. She does remember one part where she fell and slammed her head into a wall. She doesn't know how that happened. But she remembers also saying no. At one point, she remembers yelling no to somebody. That's all she really remembers. The boys, in the following week, what they did is they went to school and they said that Rattaya was a slut, that she slept with all 4 of them who were there. There was 2 original boys, and then 2 more came over later on in the night. They admitted that Rattaya was drunk. They said that, you know, she was passed out, and we pushed her out a window so she could throw up outside the house. And when she was in that position, they had sex with her. 2 of them photographed it, what they were doing to Rattaya. They actually photographed it, and they spread the photo around the entire school. After that, Rattaya was basically shunned and shamed right out of the community. She would get texts and emails and messages on Facebook. Are you the slut hanging out the window? Sluts aren't welcome in our school. In the following week, she had a nervous breakdown. We went to the police, the RCMP in Cole Harbour, Nova Scotia. In our opinion, you know, they just failed miserably at their duties to investigate a crime. They did a year-long investigation. During that time, they didn't once speak to any of the 4 boys who were involved with this case, not a single time. That to us, it was just unreal. They didn't try to do anything to stop the photo from spreading. They did nothing to hold anyone accountable for spreading it. They did a shoddy, piss-poor investigation that seemed to us focus more on, Rattaya shouldn't have been drinking, rather than on, look, this is sexual assault. This meets the definition of crime, of rape, in the Criminal Code of Canada. She wasn't in a position to give any consent whatsoever.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Rattaya's
real
school.
Quick. Sorry to interrupt
you.
Yeah, sure.
Go ahead. I don't want to jump on too much. Go ahead.
Just where you are right now in the story with the police investigation.
No.
When they say she shouldn't have been drinking, it seems that the investigation was less about whether or not she was sexually assaulted and whether she was culpable in some way. Is that kind of the sense you got?
I would go with that for sure. And also, the Chronicle Herald, the newspaper, the main newspaper here in Halifax, they have an investigative reporter there named Selena Ross. She wrote 2 big, long articles last December. And she actually had an inside a contact in the police department. And he shared with her that when they had anything at all, like they confiscated Rattaya's cell phone. You know, they took her iPad. They took things like that from her, but not from them. And it seemed to be that when they were going over anything at all, they spent a lot of time focusing on Rattaya, what Rattaya did, what Rattaya said, while not doing anything at all to investigate what she came forward and went to them with and complained about. You know, she's the one that made the police statement. And rather than investigate her claims, what they did is they investigated her. So it was very frustrating for us as her family to see that, but there was one point too where 2 or 3 days after it happened, one of the boys involved texted Rattaya, and I saw the text. I have actually a copy of the text. He said, "Are you okay? I hope you're okay with everything." And she wrote back, "I'm fine." And the police really, really used that against her. To say that she's fine has nothing to do with whether or not she gave consent. It has nothing to do with her state of mind that night. It has nothing to do with her her capacity that night. This is a 15-year-old girl who literally was just gang raped and photographed doing it and had her entire reputation destroyed at her school. why the police decided to focus on what she did is just beyond me. It's shameful, in my opinion. It's an utter failure on the part of the police.
Mm-hmm. Let's spend a little time on that. I do want to clear up one thing because, and this may seem completely immaterial, but it's important to me for, I don't know why, but I've seen you listed as her father in some reports and her stepfather in other reports. I'm a little confused on that. Are you her father or stepfather?
Yeah, I don't know where that comes from, but I've seen that stuff too, and there's been a lot of strange things come out here that are just absolutely out to lunch, right? I don't know where that stuff comes from. I am Rehtaeh's father. I am her biological father.
Okay.
She is my daughter. I am listed on her birth certificate, and I have been with her since the day she was born. I'm the first person who ever held her, and I'm probably the last person who kissed her goodbye.
And that's an odd thing. I mean, I don't want to digress too much, but one thing on this show I cover a lot is just how poor of a job most journalists do, at least here in America. I don't know if Canada is better or worse, but it seems like an immaterial detail. But to have you listed as a stepfather is a really weird misprint, because to me that doesn't seem nefarious necessarily, like they're out to paint you any certain way. It almost just seems like they're not doing any due diligence at all. I mean, how long would it take to research whether or not you're the biological father? And why would they even print that? It says, to me, what other things are they missing? What other things do they consider an immaterial detail? But you are the girl's father. Strange.
Yeah, I'm Rehtaeh's dad. I'm her actual biological father. I had a relationship with Rehtaeh's mom, Leah. In my opinion, that relationship ended with a gift that completely was wonderful in my life. I love my daughter with all my heart from the day she was born. But I am her dad. I'm absolutely her dad. And there's other strange little things that pop up online, and I have no idea where they come from, you know. But I do think, though, most of the mainstream journalist reports kind of get it right. But there are some misinformation that gets out there, and then it just spreads. And I don't know how it does it or why it does it. But I end up trying to correct it sometimes, you know. Even a couple weeks ago, I was trying to correct somebody that, no, I'm not her stepdad. I'm her father. It just gets out there. It just spreads. I don't know what.
Well, it's just the nature of the Internet, and that's, you know, one of the main topics we're going to be talking about today, because I will be completely honest with you. I have not covered your daughter's case, but I have covered the Steubenville case and other cases. I've done multiple shows on the term rape culture, and I think from a debating standpoint, you and I would disagree on the terminology of rape culture. However, and I'll tell you why, just so we're really clear, I have a hard time believing that there is sort of an undercurrent in our culture that does victim blame and it does sort of accuse the victim. I've seen it more in my experience when I've questioned something like this situation to say, well, how much was she drinking? The standpoint I come from is much more of a preventative one. And in my instances, when I say, let's question why this happened, I'm just questioning so it's preventing it from happening again. And I've been accused of being a part of rape culture and a victim blamer. This case with your daughter, to me, is pretty clear-cut that if there is a thing as rape culture, if there is a real deal, this is as close as it gets, considering that, as you said, the police went right to investigating her and taking her property and not theirs. That does seem a little suspicious. So I just wanted to get that out of the way in case you go and do some research later.
No, sure.
I talked to that.
I appreciate it. Sure.
And I think, and we'll talk about this later, but the question of how much alcohol was involved, did she know the boys, the I'm fine text, a part of me, and this is because I can be more objective than you, obviously, this is not my daughter.
Yeah.
Part of me is like, well, this is a kind of conversation we should have. We should have these kinds of conversations because, who knows, I might have a daughter one day, and I want to say these are things that have happened to other people. Let's learn from it. So from here on out, if I do ask questions that you feel, oh, my God, Jake is, you know, part of the vigilante of rape culture, I promise you my intent is really much more curiosity, and it comes from a good place of prevention.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Jake. I appreciate that. I do. I've been outspoken about Rehtaeh's case, and I have not tried in any way to shy away from questions. I know there's a lot of questions out there, I would rather you say exactly what you think, exactly what's on your mind, because In my opinion, I have nothing to hide, and I'll answer it and address it the best way that I can.
Very good. Okay, well then my first question, this underage drinking, there was an adult in the house that when she was partying mm-hmm. with her friend and the boys, that adult fell asleep. Am I reading that properly? And they started
My understanding of it is the adult was in the house asleep, not aware that there was kids coming over, or kids even in the house at all, other
so
than her own
the,
children.
They did the typical teenager thing that we've all done. I mean, this is one of the things that why I feel very defensive in your defense and in your late daughter's defense is like, we were all 15 once, we're all stupid. So, you know, to say, oh, she made a mistake, like who here at 15 didn't sneak in a friend's house and get trashed? I mean, we've all done it. So there was an adult there.
Exactly.
What happens, the adult fell asleep, and it seems that her and her girlfriend and the other friends were like, oh, you know, no adult supervision, let's be 15-year-olds. And they invited people over and they drank. I don't think that is something that should condemn her to the rest of her life being ruined. I mean, she did commit suicide, but had she not, I mean, this would have followed her forever. This picture was digital. It was spread around the Internet. This was a mistake that she made that night that really could have affected her life, no matter what decision she made. And I don't think that's fair at 15. So that's the other side, in my opinion. So there was an adult. It wasn't I'm sorry to ramble. I guess what I'm trying to ask you straight out is, you didn't say, you know, just whatever you're doing tonight, I don't care, honey. You knew she was, you thought she was in a house with an adult supervision, yes?
Well, we thought she went to a sleepover.
Right.
And, you know, and right, kids do that, sleepovers, when they're 15 years old. She's had friends come to my house, you know, and you're doing a sleepover. But when she has friends here, you know, she's often said, you know, can we go to the mall? Can we go do – and no, you can't. I'm responsible for that kid who's in my house having a sleepover. And their parent is expecting me to be an adult, to be a guardian, and to watch out for you. You're expecting that will happen in return. You know, so Matea was like going away that weekend to do a sleepover. We're thinking, you know, that girl's house, that girl's mother is going to watch out for Matea. Now, they went down the street. I don't know what time it was, but they went down the street. And the house they went to with the two boys in it, there was an adult also in that house. And that's the house where the adult was sleeping.
Okay.
She was in the house, but she was asleep. It was only later on when the girl Ritea was doing sleepover with, she went home to her mom and said, you know, we got to go back and get Ritea. And they basically just couldn't get Ritea to get out of the house because I believe it was the state she was in. They couldn't get her leave. But it was a sleepover.
And
that's
one of the...
Mom knew, it was a sleepover.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Jen. No, Jen, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and that's just one of the things that people use as evidence of her not being raped. And I've said so many times, you know, especially at that age, we, you know, as people, humans, kids, teens, don't know how strong alcohol is and what it does to you, and you know, until an hour later when you're blacking out. And when someone's drunk, that drunk that they're barfing out a window and, you know, doing things they wouldn't typically do if these were her friends, they knew that this is not Ritea. A drunk child cannot consent is my bottom line. And it really bothers me when people say, well, she was, you know, naked on a bed. Well, I'm sorry. I mean, I've definitely not known what's going on when I was drinking before, and that doesn't mean that you get to have sex with me. You know, and something also Leah Parsons, the mom, said too, is that she did tell her daughter you should not be outnumbered with boys and alone and drunk, you know, and that no one stepped in. Like, why don't we have to tell our sons? I have three sons, Glenn, and I'm going to be sure to tell them to not outnumber girls, you know, and to not be drunk. And, you know, I know they're going to drink, but I'm going to make it very clear that if you're drinking and they're drinking, it can result in things that are not okay, in rape and you being accused of rape and many different things, to not have drunk sex when you're not in a relationship. I don't, you know, it's not safe.
And to be clear, Glenn, you...
We did say that to... We said that to Ritea all the time, her mom, because her mom was raped when she was 13 years old. So she always instilled the idea in Ritea's head, you know, to be careful and watch out for yourself. Not that it would ever be your fault, but you need to take some measures to just try to be safe. So if there's more boys in a house than girls, then, you know, you need to start rethinking where you are.
Right.
And I remember very clearly, and it just sticks in my head... it was a week or two before this happened to Ritea, and I was dropping her off at her mom's house. And, you know, she was just talking to me about friends and girls and stuff like that. And I'd mentioned to her, you know, when you're with around your friends and stuff like that, you always make sure that you trust your friends, that if something happens, that they're going to take care of you. They're not going to leave you. They're going to watch out for you and protect you. You know, so it's good to teach, you know, young men, I guess, you know, when you're drinking, don't do this stuff to girls. It would have been so much more to me if there was a young man in that house who, sure, he was drinking, but he saw what was happening. He said, no.
Right.
There is no way in hell you're going to do that to this girl. No way. I'm not going to let you do that to this girl. I'll call the police if you start doing this. You know, I mean, I just, there's four of them there who assaulted Ritea, and not one of them just was able to say, this is just wrong. You know, I don't understand that. And we see the same thing with Steubenville. We see the same thing with Maryville. And there's all these other cases coming up where there's all these young men around, and you just wonder, not one of them is going to say, look, this is rape. I don't understand that. It shames me. I don't understand how they couldn't have taken that and say, look, you know, one good kid just to come forward and say, no, this isn't going to happen here, not on my watch. It's just like they either joined in or they did nothing.
And I have said, and I've gotten a lot of slack for this as well, but because I have boys, you know, sometimes I think of the other side of the coin is that these boys are drunk as well, I'm assuming. And were the boys drunk as well?
Yeah, we have the email from the message, the Facebook message from one of the kids days following Ritea's death, where he panicked, and he wrote this long confessional statement to Ritea's mom, Leah, basically explaining everything that happened that night. And he says in there, you know, yes, we were drunk. We weren't as drunk as her, but yes, we were all drunk and stupid and young. You know, he
but
says
I'm with
words
you,
like that.
There's a side like that where you think, well, they were drunk too. They're not thinking right, but there's four of them. There's four of them, like you said, and one of them had to have known this is wrong, and they consciously made a decision. Whether they all were drunk or not, they weren't passed out, blacked out, barfing. You know, they knew she
was. He gave a very. Ritea didn't remember what happened that night. She remembers a couple little details, but and then waking up the next morning, this kid here, he's saying that yes, we were all drunk, but then he can list this long, detailed message of everything that happened that night and who was involved and the order of events, everything, you know. So he had some drinks, but he was nowhere near blacked out, you know.
And these boys were not charged with rape, correct?
That's correct. They were not charged with rape. And
how
you know,
is this email of him confessing all these things not used as evidence to help that happen?
Following Ritea's death, he started calling Ritea's mom, Leah, and saying, you know, hey, I need to talk to you. I need to explain what happened. Everyone hates me now because everyone's saying I killed Ritea. And Leah was like, she never called him back. She never answered his calls. And then all of a sudden he got to her on Facebook. You know, I need to talk to you. I need to tell you what happened. Everyone hates me. And she replied to him and said, you know, if you have anything to say, say it on here right now. And he goes so far, I'll just say his email, okay? I have a copy of it, and Ritea's mom does, and the police do, and some other people have copies of this message from this guy. Basically, he admits in there that they were all drinking, that him and another boy walked Ritea up the stairs to a bedroom. They took her clothes off. She started to get sick and throw up. They opened up a window, pulled her over, leaned out the window, pushed her out it. They debated who was going to go first. Two of them went. One of them, when he was going, he said, hey, take a picture. So the other kid that was in the room took a picture of it, and then he gave the thumbs up, like a big smile, like this is a trophy shot or something. And he said, these are the words he's using. And then we picked her up out of the window and laid her on the bed to sleep. And then he says, but I had, we needed the bed that he was in or she was laying in. So they carried her to another bedroom, and that's when they couldn't carry her. They got two other boys who came home. These are two younger boys. One of them is the brother of the kid who lives in the house. They carried her to another room, laid her on the bed. The oldest boy who was there, I believe he was 18, Ritea's 15, he told the other three, get out of the room, and they all went in the living room. Then he came out 20 minutes later with a big smirk on his face. This is what the kid describes. He said he came out of the room 20 minutes later with a smirk on his face.
So how is it possible there's not rape charges with this kid confessing it all to you?
Yeah, I know. And this kid who wrote the email, he had to go home. He went home. He called the next day and said, hey, you know, what happened, ended up happening last night. And the oldest kid said, hey, yeah, no, the other two ones, my brother and the other kid, his friend, they went in their bedroom and had sex with Rehtaeh too. Well, she's in there completely passed out. So why did they not charge him with rape? The police have that message, and during this, they reopened their investigation. They charged him one kid with distributing child porn, and the other kid with distributing and production of child porn. When I talked to the police officer, when he called me after a few months of investigating the second investigation, the second case, right, they reopened it, I asked him, I said, what about sexual assault? He's admitting here she's throwing up drunk. They're carrying her around the house and admitting in this email that they're having sex with her. And he said, well, you know, when I go talk to them, I'll bring that up to sexual assault. It's almost like they didn't even bother checking the sexual assault in the second investigation. Why that is, I have no idea. I don't have a clue. You have him admitting he's having sex with an unconscious girl, and they don't charge him with sexual assault. And then people come up to me and say, oh, you know, if there was a rape, they would have charged them. I believe in that, and I've always believed in that, but now I've got firsthand right here, right in front of my face, you have a kid admitting he raped my daughter, and the police wouldn't lay charges. And why they wouldn't lay charges, I have absolutely no idea. I have not a clue.
Glenn, when you say you have no idea, surely somebody's got a theory. I'm sure you've heard somebody.
We had in the first investigation, and there's a reporter up here in Canada named Christy Blanchford. She does a columnist for the Globe and Mail. And she wrote an article shortly after Rehtaeh's death of why there was never charges in Rehtaeh's case. This is before the Facebook message was sent, by the way, okay? So Christy Blanchford didn't have all the information. But she said that she's seen the file, you know, and someone close to the investigation contacted her, whether that's a lawyer, a Crown attorney, or if it's a police officer. But they said that there was a verified independent witness to this the whole night, and that the witness said the sex was consensual. But the witness was the girl who Rehtaeh was having a sleepover with. She told the police that the sex was consensual. And she said that because she said she went up to the room and Rehtaeh was laughing and laying on the bed naked laughing, which follows Rehtaeh's story. I guess she was intoxicated. She doesn't remember anything. So whether she was in whatever state she was in, I don't know. But the police took that and gave it to the Crown. And the Crown saying, well, if there's a witness, we could never, ever... saying the sex was consensual, there's no way we could charge and get this in court and have this witness come forward and saying, yeah, this is what I saw, it was consensual. There's no way we should charge them with sexual assault because it would probably end up in a not guilty plea, and the Crown doesn't want to risk doing something like that.
Right, which
makes
sense.
The Chronicle Herald reporter, pardon me?
I said that kind of makes sense.
It makes sense to me. If you have somebody like that, then absolutely. You know, it makes it very difficult, but I can understand that it's difficult enough as it is when it's just two people's words against each other, you know. But the Chronicle Herald reporter I mentioned earlier, Selena Ross, when right after Rehtaeh died, they started doing a big investigation into this case. They went and talked to that exact girl. They talked to her, they interviewed her, and she said, and they asked her, why did you tell the police the sex was consensual? And she said, well, when you're being raped, you're kicking and screaming and fighting. And Rehtaeh wasn't kicking and screaming and fighting, so she couldn't have been raped.
Wow.
Whether or not the police actually went far enough in their dealings with this girl, I have no idea. But that's on the record with the investigation from the Chronicle Herald. I mean, they have that girl saying, basically, she doesn't know what consent is. You know, she has no idea what consent is. This is their number one witness saying that it's not rape unless you're fighting and screaming.
Yeah, that's like saying it's not legitimate rape unless you're pregnant. I mean, that's a ridiculous statement
you're
talking about intoxication.
Yeah, it's exactly like saying that. And again, this is a 16-year-old kid. You know, and I read the email from the Facebook kid, and he's sitting there saying, you know, hey, so now you know the whole story, and I swear to you, so you can see, we did not rape your daughter. He actually says that in his Facebook message. After he says that they had sex with her when she was throwing up and had to carry her around the house, he ends it off by saying, so now you know the whole story, we did not rape your daughter.
Unbelievable.
It's unreal to read that. It's like he's got no clue in his head at all what rape actually is, and neither does his witness. They have no idea at all.
Well, they're kids. They're idiots, obviously. I mean, they're obviously
kids.
Idiots.
Well, and that's my And yeah, their kids are idiots, you know, and I've talked to the Nova Scotia government, and I've told the government here in our province and even in Canada that this is a huge failure on our system here, where we're teaching children to put condoms on bananas and teaching them to use the pill and safe sex, but we're not teaching them healthy relationships. We're not teaching them the law and consent and you know, what respect means when it comes to having intercourse with someone. We're not teaching that.
No,
and
that's
just
right.
A shame.
I mean, it's one of the things that stands out to me the most, actually, in this case, is something you said, which is, why wasn't there one guy, one of the boys, that was like, hey, this is wrong? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you would think that's a natural response, that everyone would just get a sort of sick feeling in their stomach, like, there's something wrong here. We're propping her out a window so she can vomit. This doesn't seem consensual. But if they had those thoughts, either they're terrible people, which is more than likely, or the other case is that they don't even think that that is rape. And maybe that is something that does need to be educated. That's not something we should shy away from. Like, kids are so stupid that you can't take for granted how stupid they are. Maybe you do have to say, hey, Junior, Jonathan, whatever your name is, Jake Junior, if the girl is vomiting and you have to pick her up and prop her out a window, that's not consensual. Maybe that is something. And I don't mean to make excuses for him, but maybe they are that stupid. For him to write
and
that
and there's pictures of it. There's pictures of it. Like, how is that not evidence of a girl vomiting out
likely,
a window?
I don't mean to. I mean, more than likely, they're terrible rapists. I'm just saying, what if maybe 10 years ago, these boys, one of them was told that that's clear rape. You know, like date rape, for instance. You roofie a girl's drink, that's rape. So everybody understands that. If a girl's drugged, there's no question about whether or not that's rape. So why?
But a 15-year-old drunk on her face, then people aren't calling it rape because she was naked and laughing. Like, is this?
Yeah, it's a weird situation. I mean, I can understand it from all points. That's one of the problems of being me that I hate about myself, is I can be horribly, almost sociopathically objective in a case like this. I can see why they would say, if there was a witness saying she seemed consensual, she was laughing, she has the text of saying, I'm fine, she ingested the alcohol, it wasn't like she was tied up and they poured it down a funnel. I mean, there were decisions. I could see where that would plant doubt in the police, but once you start factoring in the four boys, the two other boys, the email that you got, the fact that, and this is a thing we haven't really talked about enough, is that Rehtaeh took her own life. And to you know, if you make a mistake that you're responsible for, you know, that'll haunt you. But to me, to go that extra step to take your life, that means you almost have to feel, beyond that it was a mistake, you almost have to feel like no one's got your back. Like, I can't imagine what Rehtaeh would have felt like at 17, when the police department, who's supposed to be serving and protecting, are basically, in so many words, accusing her. Like, let me ask you this. Do you think the lack of, I don't know if the word is sympathy or not, from the police department, do you think that had anything to do with her committing suicide? Or do you think it was just the rape?
I'm kind of careful. I don't want anyone to ever think that we're blaming the police or blaming her school or the hospital. I blame the four people who assault her for her death. That's where it begins and ends with me. But I was asked by the Ontario Provincial Police Department before, they were doing some kind of training video, you know, and they were just basically doing about victims of violence and stuff like that and how they feel. And the guy asked me, you know, if there's one thing you could say to police officers out there, what would it be? And it would be that I understand cases like this are very difficult. I understand they're very emotional. They're very explosive. They're extremely hard to get into courtroom where it's he said, she said, and all these blurred lines about things. And I know that. And I know that in my heart, that's difficult. But if at the end of the day, a police officer set my daughter down and said to her, we can't lay charges in this case, and she believed in her heart, they did everything they could, then it would have made a huge difference in how she felt about herself and about validation she had as a human being and as a victim. But at the end of the day, in this case, they never even spoke to anybody. They just did a haphazard, half-assed job. They never went to any of the people she accused. They never seized any evidence. And there's other police departments, too, in Canada, who have spoken out and said, you know, I can't believe that they actually had them spreading this around, that she's throwing up out a window. They're texting that. This is Rehtaeh throwing up out a window. We're having sex with her. And they never seized that evidence. There's other police departments in Canada that are also looking at this case and just shaking their head like, you've got to be kidding me. But I believe it would have made a big difference to Rehtaeh if she felt in her heart the police here validated her as a person, and I don't think that was the case. I'm not saying that that would have saved her life. I'm not saying that the lack of that ended her life, but I know she was extremely upset when they dropped this case because she basically felt that they didn't even try. And I agree with her. They didn't try.
It certainly seems that way. Again, I'm not there. I don't know all the facts, and you know, I'm just a lowly podcaster. But it does, and not just from just having you tell your side of the story. I mean, even the other sides of the story. You know, we'll take some calls in a few minutes. I'm sure someone will disagree with you and I on this, but even then,
that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah. The point is, it's like there. I don't know how you can judge this really any different. I don't know how you can look at this any different than a sexual assault. And let me just say this for the record, my opinion is even if your daughter was compliant at the beginning, or even if she was flirtatious at the point of vomiting, which means you are in alcohol poisoning mode. You know what I mean? Like you've had too much alcohol. Your body's basically saying, too much of this, let's eject it. When she didn't remember the next day, when obviously there was a point for her that night where it doesn't matter what led up to that. That doesn't matter if she was the school floozy or anything they would try and get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
That was straight sexual assault. There's really no other way to argue. I mean, unless there's something that you and I are missing, you know,
no,
of course.
There's the rape culture part of it. You know, and I think even the child porn charges, people are acting like, you know, it's wrong to charge these boys with child porn when there's pictures of children having sex that were sent around. Like, how is that even debated at all?
Well, I'd want to talk about that. Let's move on. The actual charges, since they were not charged with rape, and the case was reopened, but the actual charges they've got them on are distribution of child pornography. And this is also one of those weird, this is just a case that just drives down the middle for a lot of people. A lot of people are against the charge of child pornography because the boys in question were, quote-unquote, children themselves. And can you charge a child with child pornography? By law, it is child pornography. Your daughter was 15 at the time of the photo. It was a sexual act, and it was passed around. That is child pornography. I personally am glad they got charged with it, because if they get off scot-free, that's not right. But I can see if you're looking at this very objective, like in a Petri dish, going, this is what the boys did, this is what they're charged with. Is that justified? How do you feel? Do you feel that that's a proper charge, or you would have been more satisfied with sexual assault and calling it a day?
I would have preferred that they looked at the evidence freshly in the second investigation, and I do believe if they did that, they would have laid sexual assault charges here. You have an actual confession from somebody there that Rehtaeh was needing to be carried around the house when they were having sex with her, you know, and two of those boys, they never even looked at them. And when they laid these child porn charges, they never even went and asked them. They never talked to them at all, you know. So I don't know. I don't know if the police ever even reconsidered whether or not this was sexual assault. Why? I don't know. They won't talk to us. They won't let us see her file. They're not sharing stuff with us. You know, they shared it with a reporter to discredit Rehtaeh, but they won't share it with her own father so that I can try to defend her.
Right.
And it's frustrating. Child porn charges against children, you know, we gave kids these tools, and I've said this lots of times, you know, we gave them these massive, massive communication tool that is just unbelievably powerful beyond anything I had when I was a child. And we never really set down guidelines or rules or anything like, here you go, this thing here can absolutely destroy someone's life in just one single little text sentence. So here you go. And go out there and have fun with it, kids, and you know, we'll end up with just massive devastation to a lot of kids' lives right across the board. I don't think child porn charges do a whole lot in this case. The police have even said to us now the conditions they're under right now as they await their trial will be worse than the conditions they have if they're found guilty for child porn. So it's not going to amount to anything anyways. Yeah. And I know that. It's just not. I would have preferred it if we spent all this time and resources and energy trying to get kids to just stop doing it. Don't, you know, put it something in the schools and say, look, this is serious. You're ruining people's lives, and just make it so that it's unacceptable for them to do it rather than them go fearful that, wow, I'll get charged with a crime. You know, have them the idea in their head that this is just wrong to do this to somebody. It's horrible.
I mean, that's kind of why selfishly, I guess maybe it's the word, when I hear about the levied child pornography charges on those boys, even if I objectively want to go, well, is that right or wrong? The point is, I, this is not me being objective now. Like, I want them to pay something. I want them to suffer something. And if that's all I get, you know, as a concerned citizen, I'll take it. I want more, but I'll take it. And I don't really even give a shit if it's justifiable or by the book. I don't care. These boys, I say make a fucking example out of them, because you're right. This is really coming down to the way in which children and the generations, their children in the future, are growing up in a completely different era than you or I or anybody, you know, above 25 or 30 has dealt with. There are things that we cannot even fathom. The pressure these kids have on themselves. One mistake, one little mistake or error of judgment, can literally ruin the rest of your life. I mean, when we were kids, we were told, you know, don't get someone pregnant, you know, don't drive drunk. And for the most part, we'd listen. But, you know, it doesn't mean we weren't having unprotected sex drunk or driving drunk. We just never got caught. There was this kind of, I mean, we're all stupid is what I'm saying. But these kids these days, once you make a mistake, they used to threaten us with the permanent record. I remember when I was a kid, they'd be like, this will go in your permanent record where I'll do the jack-off sign. But now there is a legit permanent record. It is your digital footprint. It is your social networking. And that is something that I find the most shocking, not in your case, but in general about our teenagers these days, is they don't even have an idea of the devastation that a simple phone in their hand, the device in their hand, what that could do. And worse, it's our failure as the older generation not to educate them, not to say, whoa, think about what you're doing. Like, these guys probably were like, oh, look, you know, I'm posing in a picture. They're so stupid, they couldn't even fathom that this was a girl whose life would be forever ruined because of this. And I don't know why these aren't having conversations. I don't know why this isn't in school. I don't know why, you know, we had DARE about drugs. Why don't we have this about consent laws? And
no, it's so true.
That's, I mean, okay, well, let me let you do this, Glenn. Obviously, you can't bring your daughter back. But from this day forward, what is it that, if you could change one thing now, would it be emphasis on education on these situations, or would it be something else? What would you do now to change it?
If there was one thing I could do right now, it would be, I would have to probably go with the thing that I think would have the greatest impact. And I would say that it deals with education. It deals with educating youth about consent laws, talking to young men and young women about what represents a crime, healthy relationships. I think that would have just a massive impact. And, you know, when we're doing these, if we start doing something like that, you know, you could also talk to them about the social media aspect and how powerful these weapons are that are in their hands. You know, it's just unbelievable. Yeah, and like you said, you know, it's a tool. It's a weapon. It's literally a weapon that can destroy someone's life. So if I could do one single thing, I would just definitely bring in some kind of consent education in our schools regarding healthy relationships, and also regarding where the cutoff line is. You know, what represents now you've gone taken this, and now it's a crime. Now you're a criminal. Now you're raping this person. You know, I in my heart don't think that kid who wrote that email believes he raped my daughter, even though he's admitting having sex with her and that she needed to be carried to the place where he had sex with her while she was throwing up. He doesn't believe in his head that he raped her. And it's just shocking to see that. That's the case. That's the case. Yeah. I mean, what kind of a failure is that in our community, in our society, that he actually believes that? No one's ever talked to him about it. No one's told this kid, you know, this is what healthy sex is. No one's done anything like that. It's destroyed him, and it ended my daughter's life. Not only that, but, I mean, I was not even an hour ago Googling about this case, and there his name came up. He's one of the kids who raped Rataya Parsons. That's never going to go away on this kid. It's written in black and white. You know, right. It's on the Internet. It's never going away. And that's, you know, I'm not saying it's a shame. I have all kinds of terrible feelings about him. But if I could stop it from happening to somebody else, my God, and the answer would be not to go out on a vigilante rampage and gun them down. It would be to go into a school somewhere and say to young men and young women, this is what's right and this is what's wrong.
Let me ask you one more question. I mean, to reiterate what you said and just clarify, I think the best thing for you and I to say, because we're kind of saying the same thing about how it's affecting this boy's life, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are like, how dare you? We're saying if he legitimately wasn't even aware of what he was doing was wrong, which is possible. I mean, he may be an evil bastard. In that case, fuck him. I hope he gets hit by a car and explodes. But if there was a part of him that didn't understand because it wasn't taught, then I can see, you know, you're the father of the girl, and you're even saying, I don't think he knows what he did. So if he didn't know what he did, that's why we're talking this way. I just want to make that clear. If he's right. if he's an evil rapist, fuck the guy. You know, he doesn't get it.
And I agree with that. There's one more part I'd like to add, and throw this in before you take callers or something like that. When Mateo was alive, a girl contacted her and asked her if who actually sexually assaulted her. And the girl said that he did the exact same thing to me. He raped me at a house. And Rutea tried to get this girl to come forward and say, look, you know, you got to go to the police, you got to do this. And the girl was basically like, after what happened to you, Rutea, there's not a chance in hell I'm saying anything to anybody. No way. And last week, this kid that we're talking about, the kid in the picture, give him a thumbs up, he was arrested and charged with aggravated assault. He violently attacked an 18-year-old girl and smashed her face in. It's not like some confused young man. It could be easy to be the case with one or two of the other ones, perhaps, you know. But sometimes, too, there's people out there just raising their sons not to give a shit about anybody, man or woman, and to basically think that the world is theirs, go out and take whatever the hell you want. So there's another side to things, too, you know. I think if the police did their job in this case in the first place and they went after him with everything they could, while he was texting, I'm having sex with Rutea Parsons, while she throws up, if they went to him and arrested him for doing that, this other girl may not have been assaulted. This other girl may not have been raped. You know, I think this is what happens when the police investigate these cases, as if, oh, you know, it's just kids, it's just that. Now there's another girl out there who's just living in fear, and her whole life is destroyed and ruined. And she's going through what Rutea went through, you know. That's what happens when we do nothing. So the option to do nothing, to me, is just, you're part of the problem. We've got to do something. You know, we've got to do something there.
I agree. And one question I got to ask you, and I want you to be as honest as you're comfortable. You're extremely pragmatic, calculated, and I don't mean like in a bad way. I mean in the good connotation. You're very aware. You're up on your facts. You're very, very calm. And talking to you, it almost sounds like, you know, you're the spokesperson for this family, and while I have tremendous respect for that, to be able to be in the pocket and the father of this girl, and to be able to keep yourself, you know, resigned the whole time, or not, maybe not, that's not the word, but you're just calm. There has to be part of you. There has to be that animal. Why I asked you if you were a biological father. There had to be some nights in there where you really were contemplating vigilante justice.
Oh, God.
How deep did
honestly, that go? You know, honestly, I know I would never act on things. You know, last week I was in Quebec giving a talk at a university, and I left there in a rental car. I had a two-hour drive to the airport, and then I pulled over the side of the highway, and I sat in the car, and I just screamed and screamed. It just killed me, you know. I try to be calm, and I just try to get the whole story out, man, but there's other times where I'm just so goddamn mad. I'm just so mad, you know. I want my daughter to come back, and it's never going to happen again. And I mean, I've been 25 years in the military, Jake. I've got lots of training, man, lots of training with all kinds of shit. That would be unbelievable, you know. When Rutea was alive, I asked her, because I'm her dad, and I asked her, I said, what do you want from me? What do you need me to do? I don't know what to do. This happened to you, and I don't know what to do. It'd be easy for me to just get a rifle and go on a big rampage and everything, but that's me. That's me doing what I want to do. I asked her, what do you want me to do? And she said, I want you to just keep being my dad. Make me laugh. Make me happy. When I come over to your house, I want to smile. I want to leave there feeling great. Just keep doing that. And she said to me, said, you going to prison, Dad, would be the worst thing that could ever happen to me. And I know if there's this vigilante side of you that just wants to go out there and just, like, just I hate these kids so goddamn much because they don't even give a shit. They could care less. They write death threats to me and her mother. They stick posters up on the telephone poles in front of her houses saying that Rete is a lying slut. You know, we're not, this isn't just normal stuff, man. And, you know, sometimes I shake my head and I think, well, you know, there's got to be some kind of justice in this world eventually. There's got to be some kind of karma come around here. And I mean, my worst nightmare is, I don't know, man. I have seen this kid's face through a rifle scope. Not real. I haven't actually snipered him, but I've visioned that in my head, you know.
Yeah.
Sure, I'm pragmatic because I want something better. I want something better to come out of this. If I just went on a rampage full of hate and rage, then I'm just a write-off. I'm just a write-off. My daughter's death had no meaning at all.
So you...
I don't want that. I want something good to come out of death.
You are consciously aware that as bad as much pain as you're in and what you want to do, that the minute you do that, that you're going to lose all credibility and, like you said, possibly go to prison. So
right. Yeah, so
your pragmatism,
right, exactly. The minute I do that, I'm them. I'm them then. I've turned into them, and I have no desire to be like them or even think like them or to put myself in their shoes at all. None. I wasn't raised like that.
I don't know that people understand. You know, everyone struggles in their own life. Everyone's got something. Some are worse. Some are better. Whatever. But the point is, like, that if someone cuts me off in traffic, for instance, I become the world's biggest bitch. You know what I mean? So the anger, tidal wave, the swell of hatred that you must have to fight back, minute to minute, is something unfathomable to something like me, to somebody like me, and not only that you have to fight it, but that you're winning. I don't know if, I mean, I think you getting respect really is immaterial to you, but man, from man to man, the fact that you can do that, that you're doing that, is tremendous. Just objectively, I don't know how I would deal. I don't know how I deal. And not only that, I don't know how I can go on people's radio shows and just be calm as fuck. I would be the biggest psycho. Like, you pull over and scream, that would be me 24/7. So, I mean, I know it doesn't mean much, but, man, you have my utmost fucking respect to be able to still stay in the pocket, to talk about education. You're thinking about future generations. You're thinking about preventative measures for other kids so they don't end up like your daughter when every bit of you, every fiber, wants to go on a fucking killing spree. It's tremendous. Sorry, I just had to say that. I didn't have a point.
No, that's fine, Jake. Thank you.
I mean, geez.
Maybe you should do it for him, Jake, so he doesn't ruin his life. Still make a difference for Retea. Like, let's take a trip to Canada, because I'm totally down for it.
Yeah, here's what we're going to say, Glenn. Jen and I are more than happy. Well, we're cheap. We're talking a couple hundred bucks, and we'll take care of
it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
but really, how can we help? What is there?
Yeah, that's a good question. We're not.
Yeah, what can we do to help?
Wink, 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 wink.
You know, I think the best way that you've already talked about, Jen, you've already said you had sons and you're raising your sons so that if they see something, a vulnerable person who needs more than anything else a helping hand, that your sons will be the kind of men who will come over and say, you know, I'm not going to let something bad happen to this person. That's
for
the best
sure.
thing at all. I think the best thing people can do is use their voices, you know, use their outrage, use their anger, and use it in a positive way to get something positive come out of things that happen. And I mean, this stuff with Retea, I sadly don't think it's unique. I do think it happens more than we'd ever like to admit, you know. But what would make a big difference in that is other young people who are like, you know, we've got to do something about this. We've got to stop this.
Also what you said about educating, you know, in schools, like we used to with DARE, not that DARE really helped many of us, but, you know, I mean, about the electronic age, because when we were kids, not that something that severe happened to me, but, you know, there's crazy things we did, and if there had been cameras, oh, wow, I would never have been able to be a teacher, you know, if those were permanently etched where they could pass them around to everybody, I mean, it's very serious, and you're right, we put these powerful tools in these children's hands without telling them what can happen.
I mean, yeah. And not only that, it seems like there's been a push the last, again, I'm going to get everyone mad at me, but the last 20, 30 years to not really teach personal responsibility to kids. That's not really important like it used to be. You know, and parents still teach it, but it's not the priority it once was. And now it's much more about let's build up your self-esteem or let's make sure, you know, everyone loves you and you want to tell you how pretty you are. And then that voice in their head that tells you, hey, you know, this situation I'm in might not be the best. I got to take responsibility and get out. That's not really being taught. So you factor kids growing up in this, our feelings are more important. We don't have to take responsibility world. And then they're handed these devices that literally one bad mistake will end your life. It's just too much. I feel so terrified for these kids these days, these 15, 16-year-olds that innocently think they're just on Facebook. They have no idea. They don't think long-term at that age, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's a shocking combination of events that this is happening. Anyway, I don't know what else to say on that. I want to take a call.
No, I agree 100% with that, Jake. I agree completely. You know, there's kids, you know, like you said, they're doing things and they have absolutely no idea the impact it can have on their lives or on somebody else's life. And we read about this stuff all the time. You know, it doesn't have to involve a sexual assault or child porn. But, I mean, you hear about young people innocently texting something about some other kid somewhere or joining in, yeah, you're a loser, and the kid dies. I mean, you know, it wasn't your intention to be a part of anything like that, you know, but that's just the reality of social media. And that's where our failure, I think, as adults comes in, where we're not properly instructing kids of the destructive force that they have in their hands.
Yeah, and sometimes I worry, I mean, now I'm going to digress a little bit, but I do worry sometimes that parents put too much stress on it as well. I mean, your case is completely different, but there are cases where there's this anti-cyberbullying movement where somebody, you know, you post a video of yourself on YouTube and someone calls you fat.
Hello?
And, you know, the parent freaks out, where I kind of take the opposite
Jake?
Approach. Yeah, hello?
No, I think I got cut off there, sorry.
Oh, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay, I was just saying it's a fine line. I'm going to have to have you back to go this way because this is going to digress, but I just want to make a point because I do a lot of shows on cyberbullying. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone – I think it's overused.
Yeah.
I think a lot of parents hide behind it. I don't think they're – my worry is – here's my worry. If you tell a kid, oh, you're being cyberbullied, and somebody just says you're stupid, for instance, then you give that power to the word stupid because you're now reacting as a parent by saying, oh, they shouldn't say anything bad about you. It should be all nice, and we're going to control the Internet so no one says anything mean, where I think it's beneficial to a kid to teach them. Some people are going to say stupid shit. Some people are going to be mean. That old thing we were taught when we were kids, sticks and stones may break our bones, but words will never hurt us, that's gone too. So now, I mean, in the case of your daughter, it's clear-cut black and white. That is actual cyberbullying. That is bullying. That is rape. That's not like I posted to YouTube and someone called me stupid. But a lot of times I see parents kind of combing those all together and making it this one big giant word that's bullying. And I think that does a disservice to your daughter. That's actual bullying. Let's focus on that. That is cyberbullying. That is crazy. That's affecting her personal life at school, this picture going around. I'm glad they got the child porn charges because it shouldn't be passed around. That's a personal, private photo. But some kid getting called fat on YouTube, I don't care, fatty. Get over it. You know what I mean? Let's kind of separate a little bit. And I worry sometimes. I've seen you. It seems like you've been riding that precipice a little dangerously close where I'm always scared you're going to say it should be illegal to insult anybody on the Internet. And that, I think, would be a huge disservice. You don't think that, do you?
Yeah, I think that would be, too. You know, it is a fine line, and you got to worry about the issues of free speech and issues also of making kids so delicate they overreact to every little bad thing that happens in their lives. And somehow that happening is part of the problem we're faced with right now.
Yeah.
You know, kids feel that they should have no responsibility for anything. Not only that, but that no one should ever say anything bad to them is an outrage, you know. So, yeah, I agree with that, you know.
Yeah.
The Prime Minister of Canada, Stephen Harper, mentioned after Rutte's death, you know, that and there are some instances, though, where cyberbullying, using the word bullying, is just wrong. It should be called crime. And I do think there's a line where that crosses.
I
think it crossed in Rutte's case, for sure. You know, but I've also heard from I'm sorry?
I'm agreeing with you 100%. I said for sure.
Oh, okay. Yeah, and but I mean, there's there's other cases, you know, that I've had people reach out to me online and just say the most disgusting things that you could ever imagine. You know, it's just filth. It's ignorance. It's filth. It's disgraceful comments. I don't know where they come from. I don't know why they do it. But, I mean, I'm not going to the police with it. You know, I'm not like, oh, geez, you know, this is cyberbullying. It's against the law. If they cross the line, I would probably do something, you know. But it would probably more or less involve getting them their posts removed or something like that. But I don't know. It is a fine line where you don't want to have kids all of a sudden be so delicate no one can ever say anything to them. And at the same time, you need them to understand in a way that, okay, you're with your phone and you're calling this kid at school fatty or you're fat. And then you just need to understand that in the days where we were growing up, you know, saying that to a kid, you're probably the only one that day who said you're fat, you're ugly, you should be dead. But with social media, you know, for all you know, you may be a kid piling on a pile of hundreds of kids who are all saying the same thing because it's easy to do it. You just got to text it. You're fat.
And then it goes viral and you have thousands of people after you.
And it goes viral and now all of a sudden some kids are thinking everyone in their entire school hates their guts, you know. So while it's important to not let them try to teach them not to take that stuff seriously, it's also important, too, to teach other kids when they see something like this happening to somebody, to reach out and say, you know, I think you're a great person. I think you're wonderful. I'm glad you go to our school. I'm glad you're alive. I'm glad you're here. You're a good friend. You know, it's about sticking up for other kids too, right? But we got to keep in mind these are kids too. You know, they're kids.
That's it. This is my last point before I take a call. Let's really seriously, and I'll do anything to help you. I mean this. This education movement for kids. Let's also add in there education for parents about proper ways to teach your kids responsibility and also the definition of bullying so that they don't go too far. And I think we'll teach the parents and the kids. We'll invite them in different rooms. And we'll do like a two-prong attack. Mm-hmm. And I think if we do it that way, that's just you do what you want. I'm not going to make you do my whole thing. But an educational movement that also includes the parents. Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, yeah. I absolutely agree with that. Absolutely.
Oh, God.
Kids, parents are the ones who give kids the cell phones. I mean, I gave Rite a cell phone, but I gave it to her with a contract of how she's going to use it.
Yeah, good for
you. You know, what it's good for, what she can't use it for, everything. It's just a part of responsibility, you know. That was just me, I guess. I've heard other parents do the same kind of thing, you know. But, yeah, I agree with that, absolutely. Parents should be taught about this stuff, too, definitely, because they're probably be the ones who end up getting sued for what their kids do.
That's true, too. That is part of it. All right, I am going to take a call. This is Shangi, and Shangi, I'm just going to say, my thumb is on the mute button. So it's very close. So go ahead and ask your question, but be prepared for the wrath of my mute. Oh, they're booing it. All right, don't set them up like that. That's not nice. All right, Shangi, you're on the air.
You'd resort to the mute button.
You have a question for Glenn.
Bitch.
What is your question for Glenn?
Well, first of all, I just got to say that none of what he said has been proven in court.
Right.
There's been two investigations, Jake. So we can't say that a rape even happened. What we are have to deal with here is charges, and I agree, you can't be taking pictures of somebody what you're having sex with and share it with your friends and smear her all over school. I mean, that shit is disgusting.
Yeah. So you're just, let me just get this right, because I'm gonna mediate between the two of you, because I know you guys have already had a war on Twitter. You're saying it's important that we just say alleged, right? That's your argument, Shangi?
That's right.
Okay.
That's all.
All right. What do you have a response to that, Glenn?
Well, it's alleged O.J. Simpson killed Nicole Kidman. That's alleged, and it wasn't proven in court,
Nicole
so he must have not done it.
Nicole,
I think you got to be careful when you start bringing in court cases and things like that, because, you know, you're basically, I mean, people for a long, long time have said in Canada that the police are failing when it comes to sexual assault. I have a confession from the kid. That's all I need. You know, we're hoping that there's going to be an investigation and review into what went wrong with the Rite's case, you know, why they wouldn't even speak to any of the four people who raped her, you know. So to say that there was no charges must mean there was no crime. I mean, that's, I'm sorry, that I'm I'm not buying that. I'm not buying that for a second. I think that's a ridiculous conclusion.
I mean, I speak Shangi. I'll translate. I think what he's saying is that I don't even think he's talking specifically about your daughter or her case. I think in general he's probably a little bit more reactive. And Shangi, you can correct me if I'm wrong. He's a little more overreactive and sensitive to the issue of when, like I first thing I said to you, Glenn, when I interviewed you, is sometimes we ask questions about why the situation happened, and it comes from a preventative place, and then we are labeled as, you know, rape apologists, victim blamers. I mean, I've heard it all. It's the last thing I am. And I'm thinking Shangi is probably coming more from that place, a little bit reactive. I don't think he's saying that, you know, your daughter wasn't raped. Right, Shangi? Is that fair?
Well, that is fair. We don't know what happened, right?
Right.
It hasn't been proven in court. But there's another problem here, too. We have groups like Anonymous getting involved. That fucks up police investigations. It also, it was reported that one of these alleged poor boys wasn't even at the party. That was in the Christy Blatchford article there that was mentioned earlier. And then when we have that happening, we have accused innocent people being labeled as rapists, even if they weren't even involved.
Has that happened in this case, Shangi, or are you just saying in general?
That's what he's saying, that someone was accused falsely that wasn't even there.
That's what I'm saying. That has happened in this case. That has been
reported
in the media.
You're saying that, and that reporter is saying that, yes.
Right. All right, Glenn, do you have a response to that, and then we'll...
Yeah, there was four boys involved with the assault on Rattaya. There was names released, and one of the names was just a name of a kid who wasn't there. There were still four kids there. He was just mentioned as not one there. I have no idea how that happened. I don't know who did that. Anonymous, the people who are involved with Op Justice for Rattaya, have never released their names at our request. That was just some vigilante person or whoever did that. I will say, though, that the kid who was named was a part of the kid who was sticking posters up all over the city saying that Rattaya lied and that she was a slut.
Gotcha.
So I don't really feel that sorry for him. No, you are the company you keep.
Understood. Shangi, thank you for your call. You got one last thing, or I'm gonna. I think you've responded to everything.
There is something I have a problem with. Did you send an email to a guy?
He cuts out.
Shangi, sorry. Last we heard is, did you send an email to a guy and then you cut out? Oh,
sorry, can you hear me now?
Oh, there you are. Yes.
Yeah, there you are.
All right, ask your
question. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Ask your question.
Question is, did you claim you were going to use Anonymous to hack a guy's blog?
Did I claim I was going to use Anonymous to hack a guy's blog?
Yes.
Yeah, I did, absolutely. That's the guy who's calling Barack Obama a monkey and said that I molested my daughter. I don't have any feelings about
that. Like, I don't care what his racial politics are. He's free to say what he likes on his blog. But my concern
is, I can't say that it's against the law.
You possibly using groups like Anonymous, who are hackers, who use illegal activities to gain information from people, and has been known to use to disrupt people politically, like Scientology. Which, you know, I'm all for, by the
way. Yeah, no one cares about... You're not going to get any Scientology sympathy here.
Using Anonymous as your personal army, I personally have a problem with.
It's funny, though, Shane, that you want to protect this blogger who's calling him a molester, yet you want to attack him for calling people that actually raped his daughter rapists. Like,
very good point.
You know.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me. Doesn't make sense at all.
I love Anonymous. I think they're aggressive
and
they're horrible, but if something happens
to
my children, that's the
critics
first
and
people
uses
I go
Anonymous
to.
As his personal army. I mean, come on
I
now.
Would.
This
well,
is
they're
the
better
vigilante.
Than the police. That's based on
they
my
are.
Experience. They're a lot
this
better
This is
the than
vigilante
the
mindset you guys were talking about earlier.
They
well,
didn't
I was talking
names.
About
Isn't
shooting.
That huge? They gave information to police, but they didn't release any names publicly. They were very in control. They're just good at finding out information.
Did turn information over to the police. However, this guy's claiming he's going to use Anonymous as his personal army to...
I've never said that.
hack a guy's
I
wallet.
I never said that.
Yes, you did in the email.
No, I didn't. I didn't say
you just admitted to it earlier.
Army. I didn't say they were my personal army. I said I was going to use them to hack this guy's blog because he said I was molesting my daughter.
Isn't that implying that they're your personal army?
It's not implying anything other than what
I
said.
If they're
going to
do that for you?
They didn't.
Well, it doesn't matter that they didn't. You said you were going to use them to hack a guy's blog.
So what? I would love to.
I'm
going to
say
if
who
I
cares?
I would do that. Why not? I mean, this guy's disgusting.
Well,
he's a racist pig. I don't know why you're defending him.
Yeah. Because there's a thing called freedom of speech, man. You can say whatever you like. You don't have the right to threaten people,
people
out in them with their personal information. That's the problem here. This is the conflict of the vigilante mentality that you were speaking out against earlier.
Well, no, we were talking about shooting people, for the record, when we said vigilante. Let's get that clear. And second of all...
Well, it's okay to shoot people, but then just
no, he's saying
attack whoever you like because you don't like what they say?
Well, let's
come
let's
on
consider
now,
this,
Jake.
Shingy. Because, Shingy, again, here, I get in a lot of trouble. You and I fought over the whatever that guy, that homeless guy that beat up the police that was rightfully beaten to death. We fought before. I know what it's like to be objective to the point of sociopathy. I'm with you. Actually, I know exactly what you're saying. I'm a big supporter of freedom of speech, and I don't think it's right to shut down a guy's blog because you disagree with him. I'm with you. But here's the thing you got to consider. You got to have a little bit of humanity in certain situations. This man lost his daughter within the last few years, and if
yes,
the worst thing
we can appreciate
does,
that, right?
Well, let me just
because
oh, there goes the mute.
Who,
there, oh, I broke out the mute, Jen. I did
yeah,
it.
Please
Shingy
mute. Well, I wanted you to because he's interrupting.
I don't. I'm going to bring him back. Shingy's being very respectful. I just want to say, I was discussing with Glenn 30 minutes ago about pulling over on the side of the road and screaming and visualizing shooting somebody in the head. If he said, when somebody accused him of molesting his deceased daughter, I'm going to shut down your blog. For Christ's sakes, let the guy have that. I mean, if he lost his cool for a second, do we need to start going to the fucking Constitution about freedom of speech? Shingy, you're off mute now.
Well, and wait. But what Shingy's being so hypocritical, though, is my problem is that he's attacking Glenn for calling, these boys rapists, yet he has freedom of speech, too,
Yes, he
and
does
then
have
Shane
freedom
is,
of speech,
you know,
too,
saying
and he's used that freedom of speech as a platform of himself. Problem I have is we haven't heard the other side of the story.
We have.
Well, you won't
heard
hear the other
them.
Side of the story because none of those four boys wants to talk to anybody.
Yeah, I can't get them on my show. I tried. They don't want
to
come on.
I know, they won't talk to anybody. They put posters up saying speak the truth, but when the reporters went to their houses, they were threatened with a shotgun. So let's hear their side of the story. Shane,
that's
go there
that's
and
according
them,
to you.
And
like, none of this has been corroborated.
My problem is
that
it's okay in your
head.
Or
that a girl came forward and claimed that she was raped by the same guy.
I had to mute Shangy. Sorry. I know you're
it wasn't me this time, Shangy. That was Jen.
My problem, because he won't listen. My problem is that it's okay in someone like Shangy's head and these boys' head to call this girl a slut and a whore and a participator in a drunken orgy. Yet it's not okay for us to call these boys rapists, who am I? I'm just me, and that's her father. Like, whoever has sex without any of my children without permission, I'm calling them a rapist. You can't attack him for calling them rapists when you're calling her a slut and a whore. Like, fuck that. That's the rape culture
I'm
talking
and
about.
I know, and it's the whole freedom of speech thing. I mean, that's got to be a double-way street, a two-way street. It's got to be something like that. I mean, you can't sit here and dump all over me for saying what I feel because it disagrees with what you feel. I have freedom of speech, too. And
exactly.
This guy with this blog, this guy was breaking the law. He was against – he was committing libelous in Canada. I did not have Anonymous hack his blog. I wish I could have. The stuff on there is absolutely disgusting. But what I did have was Blogger and Google step in and send him a warning and delete some of his posts because they were basically illegal. I was threatening Google to say, if this stuff isn't removed, I'm going to have to take legal action.
And that was him saying
it's filthy. I don't know why. I have no idea why Shangy is defending a guy who wants to kill all the ragheads. The stuff he says on his website is just filth, calling Barack Obama a monkey and a Negro and doing it in these ways. Why he's defending this guy, I mean, that's the best he can come up with against me? Come on.
Well, let me just be clear about Shanghi. Shanghi, I actually really do like the guy. And Shanghi's written hate raps about me. So we have a complicated relationship. The thing about Shanghi is, and I'm a Shanghi apologist, Shanghi culture, hashtag.
Yeah.
I just want to make it really clear. He's just trying to ask questions in the most innocent manner initially. And I understand what this is like because I do this week in, week out where I will put my personal emotions aside and think, let's have this discussion. What if this happened? And normally, if it were a normal world where people weren't so crazily over-emotional, you could have that conversation. You could say things like, what is this? And then they go, that's this. What happens nowadays is you're immediately branded either a bully, rape victim, you know, victim blamer, all those kinds of things. I've dealt with it. He's dealt with it. This is why him and I get along. Even though sometimes I think Shanghi's the biggest dick in the world. I'm not saying he's the coolest dude. I like him.
Yeah.
But I can see for Shanghi, over time, of just from an innocent standpoint, asking questions that have to continually defend, like you said, he's defending this guy who wants they called Obama a Negro. I don't think Shanghi likes this guy. Shanghi's very left-leaning, and I think an Obama supporter. But he will just ask the question, like, hey, what about freedom of speech? So in Shanghi's defense...
But he can't talk about freedom of speech if he's telling Glenn to shut up, okay? That's the problem with Shanghi speaking.
Well, round one to Jen. I'm going to give Jen the point on that one. All right. I don't want to bring Shanghi back. This was...
Sure.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Glenn.
I had a thing with Shanghi on Twitter before, too. And
yeah,
it seemed like
you
make some allegations, but when someone says, no, that's not true, this is what's true, if you're going to call a person an asshole almost right away, you're not really defending your position. You're basically just, you have your position. You're not interested in defending it. You're interested in just shooting everybody down. I mean, I would appreciate the guy if he would actually understand the points that I've made and say, okay, that's a good point, let's go with that. But he has an agenda, and he has his preconceived notions, and he also has his conclusion ahead of everything else, and it just seems difficult sometimes to argue with people like that.
Yeah, I hear you. Trust me, I get accused of that all the time. It's just
it's life. Yeah.
It's life. Yeah, thank you. I mean, this is an emotionally charged situation. For those of us that, you know, like Shanghi and I who are dipshits that sit at home all day and play video games, and we're having an emotional reaction to this case. You are a deceased girl's father, who of a girl who was raped, and she killed herself. And I don't think it's fair for us to start talking about how you should react emotionally. I would never tell you, and this is where I will get on Shanghi. I would never tell you, Glenn, how to fucking respond. If anything, as you heard earlier, I am in complete and total awe of how well you're holding it together. I'm choked up even talking to you about it because I just for a second, if I open up any emotional part of my heart to what you're going through, I have to shut it off in a second, and you don't get to do that. So I don't really give a shit if you fucking asked Anonymous to fuck with someone's blog. That, to me, who cares? I'd be behind you. Let's put it this way. I would be loading bullets into clips for you if you went on shooting rampage at these kids. That's how I feel about this. So I don't give a shit. Use Anonymous. But don't use Anonymous against
you know,
me, please. They scare the shit out of me. And I've done some crazy shit.
They are scary if you're in the wrong.
Tell them how cool I am, Glenn. Please. I'm really cool.
Well, it is. It's good. And you're cool. But I always said, and I said it when I first came on your show, right here, you know, I don't mind talking about this stuff. I have nothing to hide. I'm just saying what I know. And I'm saying what I believe. You know, people can take it however they want to. To me, it doesn't change anything how they take it. I have a confession from this kid. I have the information that Retea had. I have seen the evidence in this case.
Yeah.
Most sexual assault cases don't go forward. I don't know why. I don't know why this one didn't go forward. I'm hoping to get those answers when the government does a review, when the child porn charges have been dealt with in court. They're going to do a review of the police case because there are a lot of people in Canada who are saying, you know, how could this have happened? How could you do a rape investigation and not speak to the person the girl said raped you? You raped. You know, it doesn't make any sense to anybody. So if it's a failure, we need to address it. And let's do that. And I'm fine with that. Yeah.
It is important to note this confession. I mean, which is what that is.
Shanghi probably hasn't seen it. For his defense, he probably hasn't seen the confession. If he has seen the thing that I have here, right from this kid, that they used against him to charge him with child porn, it was that good, so they know it came from him. then maybe he'll go, wow, you know, there's a problem dealing with rape in Canada. If a kid's saying she's throwing up sick and we're debating who's going first,
right,
and they don't charge them, it doesn't mean there was no rape. It means there's a problem with our law enforcement in this country. That's
right.
What it means. Nothing more than that. Nothing less than that.
I'm with you. I don't like when people use the argument of there is no court case or evidence. They use that when I've argued.
Oh, man. Rich
Michael Jackson.
Can I make something clear that Shangy said? He's defending the innocent till proven guilty, you know,
right,
statement, and
that's
I
true.
Get that. But you know what? It kind of sounds like what Webb Weaver said, which I know he didn't mean, but only 100% or 100% of rapists are in jail. And,
right,
you know, and what he means by that is you're not a rapist unless you're convicted. And that's not true. There's rapists out there that have not been convicted. And what, do we have to add the word allegedly to make people feel better? I mean,
well,
I don't care. I'll call
him
rapist.
We should. Shangy is correct. He is correct in theory. Just
technically,
like I was correct
but
about.
You know what? Morally, he's being shitty.
Right. It's like the Kelly Thomas thing. Like, correct by law, yeah, but was there moral ambiguity? Could the police have handled that situation different? Yes, of course. Trayvon Zimmerman, we could go off case by case of these where, you know, we start factoring human emotion, that there is a difference where you have to look at something as the emotional side, morality, and then the law. And they're two very different parts of your brain, whether it's right brain or left brain, whatever that distinction is. They're very different ways to approach things. And I've noticed, and a lot of times, sometimes people are arguing one way against somebody arguing the other, and you can't have an emotional debate against a legal one. Zimmerman is a perfect example. Legally, he did not break the law. Should he have gone after the kid? No. They're two completely different debates, and we as people aren't smart enough to handle those conversations. We go back and forth, then we start name-calling, and it always digresses. The best thing to do is to always say, I am now speaking legally, or I am now speaking emotionally. Just a preamble like that would help. And in this case of Glenn, you know, the fact that he got this confession, for him, it's both emotional and, as far as he's concerned, legal. It's legally binding. The kid said, we raped her, in so many words. So he doesn't need a fucking court. He doesn't need the kids to go on trial. He has all the character witnesses. He knows everything that happened that night, the best anyone will know. And he's convinced that it's not alleged. And I happen to agree with him. So there you go.
Well, and I'm sorry, but someone like Shangy, I'm not even saying just him, but you can't defend a blogger calling a father a child molester, yet tell that same father he can't call people rapists. Like, that kills your case right there. Just shush.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, if you're saying, I'm going to use Anonymous to shut down your blog, is that worse than telling a guy whose daughter killed himself that he raped her himself? I mean, come on. All right, enough. Shangy, love you. Thank you. I am not going back to you. Glenn, tremendous interview. Thank you so much. We ran long. I'm going to let you go.
Anytime. I have never an issue. If you want me to come back on your show, let me know. Anytime.
I would love that.
Thank you so much.
And I'm very serious
about.
Thanks for
having me. I appreciate
this.
It very much.
Of course, and thank you for being so, you know, so honest with me. I appreciate it. And I mean this. Let's really talk. And Jen will hold me to it because I talk big every show and then I go and sleep with my cat and forget everything. I really want to pursue, I don't even know how people do this, but we're talking about educating kids. Like, what do? You start a foundation, whatever the next steps are. I really want to pursue it, of educating kids and parents so this kind of thing doesn't happen. Because at the end of the day, even if your daughter was the biggest floozy in the world and was like, woohoo, you know, titty party, rape is rape. Passing around personal information is cyberbullying, and to harass this girl and then even question whether or not did it matter if she was asking for it or not, quote-unquote, is besides the point. These kids these days are in situations that us as adults cannot fathom, and we need to be educated as well as these kids. So whatever we have to do, Glenn, I'm serious. I'm on board. I'll use all my power of 140 people that listen to the show to make sure it gets done.
Excellent.
All right.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn. You're awesome.
That was
and Jake,
right
you, I know you were raised by a woman that, and father, I'm sure, too, but taught you no means no and those type of things. But there is a lot more to teach our sons now. And her mom made the biggest point that I took from all the research I did was that if I have to tell my daughters, which she did, and people call that rape culture, but don't be drunk, don't be surrounded by boys, don't go out after dark. if I have to tell my daughters that, then we have to tell our sons the same thing, you know, and I will. I will tell mine, do not be alone in a room with a girl if you guys are drunk. Do not let it be outnumbered. And if you see it outnumbered, you go in there and stop that.
Absolutely. And not just that. I mean, I was telling a friend this morning about this show because I didn't sleep last night. I mean, I've been – this has really affected me emotionally. And I was talking to him. I was trying to get him to calm me down, my buddy. And he made this point, you know, because I was like, oh, we need to teach our kids better and parents. And he's like, you know, this is a touching moment, but him and I are good friends, let's say. And he made the point of how much your life is altered by even a simple thing as the friends in which you choose. And I don't know Ritea's girlfriends. I don't know them. I don't know these four boys at all, but I'll put it this way. Even if I wasn't taught, Jen, that no means no, I would like to believe that I would have chosen the kind of friend and the kind of person to spend my time with that would stop me if I were to do something like that. I have you.
And drag you out of there.
I'm trying to be nice, you fucking cunt. Shut the fuck up. I have
no, I'm
friends
saying,
like
I would drag you out of there.
Shut up. Shut up. I have friends like you. Shut up! And Eli and Vince and a wonderful wife that when I do something stupid, you guys are there. And that is the third part of this. It's not just educating kids and parents. It's not as simple as that. You really, really need to really think long and hard about the kind of people you let in your circle, because you really are defined by your friends. And I love you, and I love Eli, and that's all I just want to say. I know that you guys are the real deal, and if I was doing something like this, I know you would stop me. And that cannot be undersold or demeaned at all. That's something I'm very, very proud of. So I love you, Jen and Eli. That's all I want to say.
Are you going to cry?
You can talk, cunty. I am. I got a little choked up when Glenn was talking about being in his car. It's just, I mean, when the Broncos lost the Super Bowl, I thought God hated me for 48 hours. That's the emotional kind of person I am. So I can't imagine what this guy is going through. I mean,
I think
I
God
really,
might hate you.
I really,
to be honest.
I'm not kidding. Watching that Super Bowl by third quarter, I was like, there is no God. God hates me. I've done so. I was in that place over a fucking football game. So
he's an amazing man to hold himself together. And I think everyone on Twitter comes off differently, because I think, you know, maybe if him and Shangy had had a discussion in voice the whole time, it wouldn't have escalated. But I've never seen someone so calm, like you said. He really... And I think he will reach more people that way, you know. And I don't know what was wrong with the verbiage of calling it his personal army. I would, by all means, call Anonymous my personal army if I needed to, because that's who I'd go for if my children or myself was wronged and they could help me and the police weren't.
Yeah, I mean, when a fat psycho threatens me in email, I would love to have Anonymous go after them. So, again, I get it. All right, I got to go. I'm getting choked up. This is too heavy. I need to go take a rape shower, or whatever they call them, from the show. That was the wrong word.
That was really bad.
I didn't mean it that way. Rape shower is a term that we use, like, when you just feel dirty. This show really has exhausted me physically and emotionally. So I will not be on Twitter tweeting for a while. I'm going to go to the beach, and I'm going to go look at the sun, and I'm going to contemplate how fucking lucky I am. And, that's all I got to say. All right. Anything else? Should we talk about balloon fuckers or something to cheer us up?
No. I think
Let's
we should
just
end depressed. Or how about we go
Let's
out
find
just a little.
Depressing.
Down goes racist. Down goes racist.
Let's go. All right. Let's find something else to cheer me up. One more to cheer me up. Let's find something. Hold on. Should we go out with a song?
Yeah. I just saw a bad one. Forget that
one.
Yeah,
don't play that one. I know the one you're looking at. It's the Nirvana song. not a good idea. Right, I can't find this. Let's just end the show already. Jesus Christ. All right, everybody.
How about We Are the World? Here we go.
We Are the World is perfect, God.
Okay.
All right, let me get in a little... I'm going to give one of those speeches like they give. Imagine the American flag rolling down behind me slowly. I stand. The camera slowly pulls in. We are all in this together, people. Where's the song?
It's there. It's coming.
Where's the, when does the pedo sing? I want to talk over the pedos. Michael Jackson. There we go. So we are all in this together, and nothing good comes from arguing and fighting, shame. Best thing is to remember that an innocent girl is dead. Let's do what we can to prevent. All right, everybody. Listen to this beautiful song of hope, and we'll see you next week. Thank you.
We can go on pretending day by day.
I promise that
change.
Jen, sing with me. You do the women part.
We all a part of
that vision,
Jen. God's great big family. I don't even
think
the truth. You know love is all we need.